Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
You know, there have always been doubts among everyone in the population, but right now the millennials are coming of age in a time with the internet. For those with doubts before, who could they go to? They would go to church, where doubts are actively discouraged. Now they're connected with a worldwide community of people who can encourage the doubts, engage with them, and really, now they have a place to discuss it.
Well, that makes sense. That's Jesse Galef of Secular Student Alliance speaking recently on CNN about a Pew survey that shows that the number of millennials, that is people who are generally under 30 years old, they're named that because they will live the majority of their lives in the 21st century rather than the 20th century, like the rest of us. And they, in increasing numbers, are doubting the belief in God. Now, still, we need to point out a majority, about 70%, 68% of millennials surveyed still do not doubt the existence of God. But the number that do doubt it has almost doubled in the last 5 years. And that's worth noting. And maybe Jesse Galef has a point, and that is there's a lot more opportunity to voice one's doubt, to have one's doubt fueled, if you will. He's certainly interested in doing that as part of the Secular Student Alliance than there ever has been before with the advent of the internet and social media. You can talk to just about anybody, question just about anything. Now, it's part of that stage in life where the millennials are now, 30 and under, to doubt things. You're raised with a certain set of beliefs, and then you enter the adult world. And let's face it, a lot of these millennials don't enter the adult world until they're almost 30 years old. You get away from mom and dad from that responsibility. You take a little for yourself, and you start to question what it is you were told when you were younger, what it is you may have believed when you start to ask questions like, did I ever really believe it, or did I just hear it from other people and just thought I believed it? And even the belief in God can be affected by that. Not only is this something we ought to take note of, but it's something we ought to be able to respond to. This is, after all, the next generation. For good or for ill, the next generation is starting out to the tune of about 30% doubting the existence of God. And I don't know if we can say that about any other demographic group going forward. I don't know if we can say that the next generation has at least started out their adult life seriously doubting God's existence. What are the implications of this? How much is built upon how much of our society in general, and of course the church's future, is built upon people having a basic belief that there is a God? Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us to talk about this new survey of millennials and their belief in God, or lack thereof. Pastor Fisk is pastor of Witness and Youth for Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, and he's host of the video blog called Worldview Everlasting. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, good to be on.
Do you think that the media is fairly representing this new Pew survey, especially with regard to the millennials and their belief?
Not really. I was really surprised on the divergence between the videos I watched of like CNN coverage and when I read through the actual results. You know, the question that's being asked is, do you ever doubt God, right, or the existence of God? And it is true, there is a different answer by some 15% that's coming up from these young kids in these last 5 years or so. 15% more of them are saying, yes, sometimes I doubt God, as opposed to, I think it was just over 80% before, were answering, no, I never, ever, ever doubt the existence of God. And then the media is kind of running with this as, well, millennials don't believe in God. Well, that's not quite what they said. What they said is that sometimes they're not sure. They're maybe a little more willing to think honestly about what they're being taught, and even if from like a Christian perspective, a saint-sinner perspective, to wonder about what their status in the universe is, as opposed to kind of dogmatically answering, oh, yeah, I never question this at all. So I'm not so sure that the media is really fairly representing this when they say that this is a watershed shift in actual religiosity. It may be a shift in the way that these kids are viewing religion. There's a big difference between saying, yeah, sometimes I doubt the existence of God and being an atheist.
How old are you, Jonathan?
I'm 34. I missed the millennial cutoff, according to this survey, by 2 years.
Okay.
So technically, I'm Gen X.
You're close enough to it. So you're that Gen X, which is now, I can't believe the Gen Xers are actually past 30, but that just ages me. What can you tell us about the millennial generation? How it is they think, what it is they value, what it is they're looking for? In essence, kind of the broad sketch of their worldview, as you see it.
Yeah, I think one of the key things to understanding them is that they swim in technology, they breathe it. That these are the people that are kids, really, that have never not known computers. They can't even imagine a world without it. Our youth group had a garage sale this past week at Bethany, and we had all this old technology that is kind of new, but not new. And I was just stunned by this Walkman radio from 1982. All it did was give you radio, AM and FM. And the kids were just astounded by this thing. They were in awe of this. That's all it does? How can that possibly do all that? Look how big it is. And these kids, they grew up with computers. It's second nature to them. So that's a major part of how they think. Social media, communication, things like that, it's changed the way that they form their worldview and where they go for their sources. Whereas my generation, we basically got everything we knew from the television. This generation is getting everything they know from the Internet. So that's a major piece of it. Another thing, and I think this showed in the results of the Pew Forum, and it has been shown in a really wonderful book called The Narcissism Epidemic by Gene Twenge, is that this next generation, if anyone could ever outdo the baby boomers in terms of selfishness and centering their worldview on themselves, it is happening in the millennials. They are more likely to ignore clear authority for the sake of whatever they want to believe than any generation before them. At the same time, they're very servant-oriented. They want to fix the world like every generation when they're young does. They're very community-oriented. Their peer group matters a great deal to them. That's just, barely cutting the surface of it.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about a comparison with the baby boom generation, which is my generation. I am actually on that cutoff point of the baby boom generation, 1946, 1964, and I was born in 64. But I consider myself a thoroughgoing baby boomer, for good or for ill. That generation grew up, and its mantra in the early 60s and 70s was never trust anyone over 30. Then they turned 30, and then they shed all of that, sold out, so to speak, but kept the, we're the first ones to ever go through anything. We're the first ones to ever experience anything. When we retire, we're the first generation ever to really know how to retire, kind of an attitude. Do you find a similar thing among the millennials today when they're the new life experiences that they're facing, even belief in God saying, well, we got to reinvent this. We got to rethink this.
Sure. Yeah, it's not like they're the first ones ever to do it, but more like the first ones ever to maybe do it right. My perception of the boomer generation as well was this kind of, well, everyone's got it wrong before us, but we're going to fix it. And definitely that does come across, especially as you hear young up-and-coming millennials talking about things like religion or church, or that this young atheist that was interviewed on CNN, I mean, he kind of had this like, well, we atheists have been so abused in the past, but now we're coming around and we really understand that we can help people, yada, yada, yada. I mean, yeah, okay, it's not just starting with you, and that is this attitude. It does start with you. It does start with me. We're at the beginning. We're the difference. We're the change. We're the pinnacle of civilization. But really, is this anything new? And I don't know, Gen X kind of hid in the background a little bit, kind of like the silent generation before them did. But I wouldn't be so surprised to find, if you really looked into us, if we'd be so different at all. There's this part of it where it's just original sin on its cycle, repeating itself over and over again. Each generation maybe expresses it with different language, but we're still expressing the same problem of incurvatus, being curved in on ourselves, and thinking that eventually we can justify our world, whether it's by our hands or heart or head, whatever. I am going to fix the world. This is a universal problem.
We've got a minute or two here before we take our first break, Jonathan. I wonder, in terms of apologetics, you said earlier that the technology is how the millennial generation thinks. It's their medium for thought and for conversation. But are they thinking? This is what concerns me about many of the generational demographics, and that is critical thinking has been something substituted for it. I don't know what it is yet, but something is substituted for good old-fashioned thinking things true with categories like true or false.
Yeah, well, at what point can a junior high or a fifth grader, you know, really handle that? At high school, I mean, I don't know how much I was critically thinking in high school either. But there is something about, and I think this has been shown through media ecology studies, that there is a decline in literacy over the last 100 years, and that decline does seem to parallel a lack of linear thinking, at least. And linear thinking is what built the modern age, which is what gave us the ability to do many of the things we take for granted now. And so I'm with you. I'm a little concerned. Well, what does it mean now when these kids, myself, are thinking less in terms of with critical thinking skills and in a linear fashion, and more in terms of how can I entertain myself now for the next 5 hours, and the sort of entitlement that goes with that, that the world owes it to me that I shall be entertained for the next 5 hours. What happens when that generation must, in fact, run the country? That's a little terrifying. I agree. You got to kind of weep for the future of civilization sometimes. But then again, I got to ask, you know, how different is it really? There have always been slackers in every generation. Maybe it does just create a situation where you're going to have a minority that's more capable of exercising a tyranny, an autocracy, where they completely take control because the masses are so willing to just feed from whatever trough is being given them by their oppressors.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. When we come back, we'll spend a few more minutes with him talking about a new survey on millennials and their belief in God. He's pastor of Witness and Youth for Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, host of the video blog called Worldview Everlasting. You will find a link to Worldview Everlasting at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. We'll be right back.
That was just a dream. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spot.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of issues, etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, issues, etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas. Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California. Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming. Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. Redeemer Lutheran, Kakabeka Falls, Ontario, Canada. St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin. And St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Christ-centered. Cross-focused, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
One Father's Story.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Even though fathers typically have no legal say in the abortion of their unborn child, many face guilt even years after an abortion. One father expressed his feelings like this. "It has been 20 years since my ex-wife and I aborted our first child. I pray every day for forgiveness. Long after the abortion was carried out, the emotional fallout continues, at least for me. I still occasionally have sleepless nights, thinking about what we did and why. It took being the father of two great kids to make me realize that life is truly a gift."
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
You don't have the heart of Jesus. You're not giving. You're not caring. You're not trying. You're not praying. You're not serving.
The abundant life that Jesus has for his Christians is not just a life of living, but it's a life of dying, all in his name.
Speaking of naturalists now, they lean on rationality and understanding, but I think they're borrowing. They're borrowing rational capital from the Christian worldview.
We are Catholic Christians, and we are evangelical Christians. In fact, we were the first to be called evangelical.
In about 5 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Just a taste of that with a few minutes to go. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. We're talking about a new survey on millennials and their belief in God. With about a minute or so here before we wrap it up, Jonathan, what is the apologetic challenge with respect to this significant minority of millennials who doubt the existence of God?
I think it's twofold. The first thing that we really need to do, especially when speaking with our young people within the church, is to get them to think critically about whether or not they believe in truth. And then to answer that question with the recognition, of course they do. They may not all agree with what that truth is, but they all have a belief in a moral compass. They all have a belief in a right and wrong. That Pew Forum survey showed that an increasing number believe that you should not be able to fire a high school teacher for being homosexual. Okay, well, that's a moral decision. Whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant to the belief that there is something right and wrong, and we should be able to tell what that is. We've got to get people to think critically about that. Where are they finding their truth? How are they defining it? And then point them to the death and resurrection as historical fact, as the place to start finding that truth in the Scriptures. That this law and gospel, which is given to us, summed up in the death and resurrection of Jesus, becomes the foundational platform for our moral compass. That his word, in fact, defines what reality is, both in terms of the law, which is that morality, and the gospel, which is the fulfillment of all goodness for our sakes by grace alone in Christ. Both of those things have to be done, and really done as soon as humanly possible with these kids before they are sucked into the malaise of the current system.
With only a minute here and no more, in the past the church has tried to strategize for these various generations, these demographics, by kind of molding the message to fit their particular sensibilities. Is that advisable with regard to the millennials? 1 minute.
I don't think so. They're hungry for authenticity. And don't hear me wrong. I mean, we have to work to be good communicators. I do get frustrated at times when I hear pastors who I know want to be orthodox, but who really couldn't communicate their way out of a paper bag. And it's I don't know if it's because they're not trying or just think, well, I can get up here and recite paper and have everyone understand it. I mean, don't hear me wrong. I'm not saying we got to do that. But certainly there is a great danger in thinking that we need to change the message in any way. What we need to do is talk to our children, parents talking to their children, pastors talking to their youth, be open, honest, frank, and then draw the connections, connect the dots between the history of the death and resurrection of Jesus and the meaning that it has for our lives as sinners under the cross. The language that we have in Peeper is fantastic for doing this, but we need to not recite it. We need to learn how to live and breathe it, to think with it, and then to proclaim it.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of Witness and Youth for Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, host of the video blog called Worldview Everlasting. Jonathan, thanks again.
Absolutely. Blessing to be on.